Grant and Danny on the Fan, brought to you by the law firm Condori and Murad. They will take care of all the important paperwork in your life, get you and your family squared away on the stuff you got to do that might not be that fun, but they will make it seamless, easy, efficient. And if they know you came to them because of this show, they will also do it at a discounted rate. Check them out, kmlawyers.com. It's Condori and Murad, kmlawyers.com. So, Toby, you and I have been debating behind the scenes here what is going to be our Metropolitan Moving and Storage poll of the day. You can go vote right now if you'd like on the 106.7 The Fan Twitter account. The question we're going to have as our poll of the day on Grant and Danny today, you've got to buy stock in one of the two camp standouts on offense in this Commanders rookie class. Wide receiver Jalen Lane out of Virginia Tech, or Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, who has been the talk of camp, the running back out of Arizona, who was taken in the seventh round, who played in just one college game last year, or else he probably would have been drafted a lot higher. I think just about everybody acknowledges that. He had a weird technicality that led to a suspension that probably shouldn't have happened via the NCAA.
Yeah, you heard about what the exact reason was.
Yeah, it's a strange story.
I mean, it's terrible, with just basically a clerical error at an HBCU where he gave his number to someone else and they just assumed that it was him, so he was ruled ineligible. That is a horrible situation for him. Now, luckily, he ended up in Washington, but I would be causing a little more of a fuss if I were him, because you just cost me money. If I'm going from like a seventh rounder, potentially third or fourth rounder, it's big time money difference.
Yeah, if I'm his agent, I'm certainly making some phone calls about that. But here's the question. We'll open up the listener lines on this for you right now at 800-636-1067. I think it's better if we just talk about buying stock, and you could define it short or long term, however you want to play the game. It doesn't have to be for this rookie season. I think it can just be in the grand scheme of things, in the big picture of this organization. You get to put some money down on the stock of one of these two players. Who you're rolling with? Krosky-Merritt or Jalen Lane?
So it's funny, because if my hat were backwards, you'd know my answer immediately, right? Toki Altizer, you already know where he's going with the former Hokie, Jalen Lane. But the hat is forward. Because I'm looking at the short term here personally, I think that Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt is going to have a spectacular rookie season, where by the middle to end of the year, we're looking at him as the feature back. And you're still going to have Brian Robinson involved in some short yardage stuff. You're still going to have Eckler as a third down back. But 15 carries, the 12 to 15 carry guy, the guy that's going to get the most work as the running back, I could see that being Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt. And so even though I think that Jalen Lane probably has the better overall career in the long run, and I think he has a 10-plus year NFL career where he's playing with this team, hopefully for all 10 years, but if not, he's kind of bouncing around or going to other places and being a nice piece, whether it's as a number two receiver, a third receiver, or a gadget guy, whatever it may be. You know, I've talked about how versatile Jalen Lane can be. I think that in the immediate future, specifically for this season, I think that Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt could end up being the lead back, versus I don't know that Jalen Lane at any point this season ever gets higher than wide receiver three. So I'll take Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt.
Yeah, it'd be stunning if he did. And frankly, if he got to wide receiver three, that would be a huge win for Jalen Lane. But it's also not realistic necessarily, even if there's a path and we have laid it out. It's not realistic that Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt ends up being the leading running back either, right? I think a lot of people are wish casting that.
I think that can happen.
It can happen, sure. A lot of things could happen, but the odds of it are not very good. You're getting plus 400 on that, because Brian Robinson is someone that they have had the opportunity, had they wanted to move on from, to do that, and they haven't. They could have supplanted him with Chris Rodriguez, who's kind of a similar version of him. They have not done that. There's also the fact that and it's different roles and it's different types of backs, but you know Austin Eckler's going to be on the field on a lot of passing downs, on a lot of 2 and 4 minute. He's going to have a substantial role in this offense. He was actually pretty effective last year. I think they were trying to spell him and not overuse him. First and second down running the football, but he was much more efficient in terms of yards per attempt and some of the explosives that he hit than Brian Robinson. So there are at least two veterans that they have sunk energy and time and invested into as a staff. Eckler, who they brought in free agency, and then Robinson, who, not their guy, they didn't draft him in the third round, the Marty Party did, back in 2022, but they have had multiple offseasons to replace him as the RB1, and they have chosen not to do that for whatever reason. That said, I'm going to make the argument for Jalen Lane, because I actually would buy stock in him. The easiest first point to make is that Terry McLaurin is a no-show. Now, when he shows back up, he gets his number one rollback. like that, clockwork, get back on the field and go get your 7-8 targets a game and make 5 or 6 catches in week one. But until he's back, Toby, as much as we're all assuming that he is not going to miss any game time because he's going to be fined $811,000 if he misses games, we have to at least leave that open as a possibility. Because currently, even if you don't believe it, and I don't, he and his agent are floating this idea that they will not be playing football, right? So, number one, I'll just start with, we have to act as if McLaurin might not be on the field. And if that's true, Noah Brown right now is unavailable coming back from an injury. Deebo Samuel is your wide receiver one. You and I have talked a lot about the fact that he is not a traditional wideout. Now, I do think, let's just, as an aside, talk Deebo for a second. I actually think they're going to use him a lot more like he was used a couple years ago in San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan as a wide receiver than as a gadget guy. Because maybe we just don't see a lot of this. I don't know that I've seen him get a handoff at training camp.
No.
I've not really seen him line up in the backfield as a running back like he did in San Fran all the time, or as a personal protector in shotgun, something he did constantly. They haven't really done any of that while we're out there. It's mostly, you know, the craziest it gets is like him in motion or jet or orbit or something behind the line of scrimmage. But by and large, they put him out there. He lines about wide. He catches something behind the line of scrimmage or on a little slant or on a drag route. That's kind of how they're using him.
Yeah, I can recall one time he was in the backfield in a little funky formation that they've used Robinson and Eckler in before. So he's been in the backfield like that situation, but very, very few times. As a matter of fact, it's been almost, you just see this guy lining up in the slot or in motion more so than not or on the outside. He's kind of playing, you would think, a traditional receiver role with the occasional, oh, okay, you're just doing something funky like the Cowboys use CeeDee Lamb in the backfield sometimes, right, just to get a matchup. It's more that nature versus the old Deebo role, which was the wide back or whatever you want to call it, running receiver, what, you know, the mixture. He's kind of more just true receiver.
But that having been said, because that's how they've used him, I think we're in lockstep. There is this possibility that when the season starts, they're doing some stuff when we're not there. There's plenty of days where the media is not around, where practice is closed, and or they just have installs that are still coming closer to the regular season with the good stuff, where maybe Deebo is used more in that Samuel-friendly wideback role, so to speak, right? And if that's the case, now you're talking about taking even more reps at wide receiver away from him. He's also just not durable. He might play in 15 games. He's going to be healthy based on what we know for like 11 or 12 of them tops, right? So I think this is a position group where there is some crumbs to be found. Like, there is food in the cupboard that you can unearth here if you're Jalen Lane. And that gets me finally to the camp that he's had. I think he has been their best wide receiver in training camp, not named Deebo Samuel. And I'm not even willing to say that Samuel's been more impressive, because Debo's a Pro Bowler, all-pro type. You expect him to be good. Like, nobody has actually taken me aback more than Jalen Lane. When he gets on the field, he makes plays, he gets open, he routes people up, he's twitchy, he runs a sub-4.440. So I am a big believer. I'm buying him, Tobes. I get stock in one guy. He's also going to be a punt returner and play special teams right away. I think Jalen Lane helps them early on this fall. And long term, I just like what I've seen. He looks to me like an NFL receiver. I said this, I think, on Monday. I was talking to Adam Kilgore of the Post, and he said it might be his number and his size. He goes, but tell me what you think about this. I think he's got some Tyler Lockett to him. And I was like, huh. It probably is the number, and it probably is his size, but I totally get that. If he has that kind of career, let's all do cartwheels. But I'm a Jalen Lane guy.
Yeah, and I mean, you like the mentality this kid has. He's been calling Brian Mitchell, trying to get some pointers on returning kicks and all that stuff. So he's got the right, he's got his head screwed on right. He understands learning from guys and doing everything he can to get better in that sense. And I think in terms of receiver, like I've said before, I think he could be their most versatile alongside Deebo in terms of what he can do, where he can run down the field, which he didn't do a lot of at Tech. He can do a little bit of everything, whether you want to get him a quick screen on a bubble, whether you want to throw him a shallow, whatever it may be. He can kind of do a little bit of everything. But the reason that I go with Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, again, Grant, is I know it's a little far-fetched to think that he's going to take over, but they needed an explosive back. They needed someone that when they're running the read option, it's not handed off to the plotter that might break one tackle and get me 5 yards. I need a guy that if he breaks a tackle, he's going 50. And we've seen that from Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt. And he can bounce and look, this is maybe a little bit of an overreaction to early camp. We haven't seen him in pads. We haven't seen him take live reps. They haven't played a preseason game yet.
Well, in fairness, my takes on Jalen Lane are almost certainly an overreaction to early camp, too.
And that's going to happen, right?
That's all we got. But that's all we can do right now is watch practice.
Exactly. And so from what I've seen with Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, he's impressive enough as a running back that I think as the season wears on, this isn't something that happens week one. This isn't something that happens week two. But as it goes on, you know, week five, he gets 5 carries and he's like, oh, okay, maybe I'll start involving him a little bit more. And all of a sudden, towards the end of the year, this guy's getting 10, 12, maybe even up to 15 carries as the lead guy. Because when I'm running a read option with Jaden and they're playing Jaden, I want a guy that can also take it to the house. B-Rob is solid. He'll get you 5 yards, but I can live with that as my second guy. I want the first guy on my offense as a running back. When I hand him the ball, I want him to be a home run hitter, especially in this offense, and I think Krosky-Merritt has that.
Well, I'd kill for 5 at a B-Rob. The problem is he'll get you 3.7,
well, exactly.
Generally speaking. But yes, I mean, he is a singles hitter who could occasionally drive a ball into the gap for a double. I have longed for a home run threat. I don't even need a home run hitter. Doesn't need to be Adam Dunn, right? But I need someone who could just hit the ball over the fence. And I think he's got that club in the bag, and they have not had that back in a while. So I'm with you. I'm pulling for Merritt. I'm all in on trying to get him more opportunities. I would definitely spend this preseason feeding him, getting him ready, getting him in shape, and he would get touches for me in week one if it seems like he is worthy and you know, capable in that way, because it's the only way you're going to find out is to give him the chances. Why not? I just like the ability to get up the field. It just seems like he does everything a little bit quicker with a little more urgency. Everything is sudden. There's an aggressiveness, an explosiveness to his game. So I both of these guys to me, and I'm sure you're high on Lane as well.
Correct.
As I am on Merritt, should be able to help them. But this is the question we're posing to you guys right now. You can hop in if you'd like on our Metropolitan Moving and Storage poll of the day at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067, and go vote on our Twitter account, Metropolitan Moving and Storage, local, long distance, residential, 3 decades of moving the DMV. Let them do your heavy lifting and take it to the house. More at dcmetropolitanmoving.com. Who would you buy stock in of the two rookies here on offense? Wide receiver Jalen Lane or running back Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt? Here's what I find really interesting. I would have assumed when we posed this as a poll that everyone would have gone Merritt because he's been the talk of camp and he seems like a fan favorite. Right now, 55% are saying Jalen Lane, 45% are saying Merritt. Is that about McLaurin? Like, what do you take out of that?
I think it's partially everybody loves Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, but he's a 7th rounder, right? Like, it's the, okay, this is a nice story versus a 4th round receiver. Okay, that's just a round behind where Terry McLaurin was, and look where what he turned out to be. And also, maybe for this area, a little more familiarity with Jalen Lane, having watched this kid at Virginia Tech. He's electric. I think any Tech fan that watched this team over the last couple of years could tell you that when he was taken in the 4th round, whether it was here or anywhere else, they thought he could be a good NFL wide receiver. So I think there's a little bit of that as well.
He was taken 28 picks after where Luke McCaffrey went last year. And I'm not trying to come down on Luke, who I think's actually had a pretty good training camp. But there has not been a sequence of practices in camp where McCaffrey has stood out to me in any way like Lane has in the last calendar week or so before they went to Foxborough. You know, 10 or so days leading up to their departure for this joint practice. And we're going to catch up with John Keim at some point in the back half of the show, somewhere in the 5 o'clock hour, who was out there today. I want to ask if Lane stood out, because this was a significant test for guys like him and Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt and Trey Amos, the young guys on this team, in trying to determine and find out, like, okay, so you routed up some of the corners you've been going against every single day. You've memorized their tendencies. You know what defenses and coverages you're getting. You know, how do you look when you play New England? It's going to be a different scenario. But the problem with my answer on Lane is this. If McLaurin comes back, then you might not see a lot of Jalen Lane early in the season. We've also seen with this coaching staff that being a very young wide receiver makes it a little bit more complicated to get on the field. They were more willing last year to go with Alamide Zaccheaus than the guys that they drafted. They would rather have trotted out Jamison Crowder, who they claimed and brought back, than, say, a Luke McCaffrey. So they're not just going to put you out there because you were drafted in the fourth round.
Yeah, and I really like him for his versatility, but if you're just going to throw him out there for his ability to make stuff happen after the catch, it's a little redundant when that's what Deebo Samuel was brought here to do, right? I mean, if you're going to say, which of these guys would I rather throw a screen to, Jalen Lane or Deebo Samuel, both are good options, but you didn't bring Deebo Samuel here for Jalen Lane to be the one getting those balls, right? I think there's an opportunity for both those guys to be on the field, but also with Noah Brown out there, Noah Brown's a much better blocker, right? He's someone that you can depend on the outside to block. We saw a play earlier in training camp where Jalen Lane was out there, and he was asked to block Mikey Samristil, and Mikey Samristil, if they would have been full pads, would have put him on his butt. So he's not going to be able to block for a Deebo Samuel like a Noah Brown can. So in those sorts of situations, who's going to be on the field in the three wide receiver set? Noah Brown, Deebo, and Terry. So to your point, it, you know, maybe he runs into some situations, but I also think there's a possibility, again, by the end of the year, as these guys grow, that you could have Deebo on one side, Jalen Lane on the other, and it's a similar type of gravitational pull where you have to be ready for a screen for either one of those guys, and one of them's motioning, whatever you're doing, you can get really frisky with the offense by using both of those guys in
so
a similar
different role.
Like,
Debo's going to rely on physicality, violence, running through dudes, running into dudes, pinballing off of people. Lane, it's just wiggle. You know, it is quickness. One of these guys you can't touch in a phone booth. I mean, he ran a 4.3 4.40 at the combine. 4.3 4 his 40-yard dash time. And to your point, I think he's listed 5'10". I'm not even sure if he's, you know, a true 5'10 without cleats on. He's not a big guy at all. He's not particularly heavy either. But that's coaching, is to make sure. I don't want that guy blocking necessarily as the guy that has to make sure a play works, that he's going to pin a corner and get him to the sideline. Like, when he's on the field, it doesn't mean every single time he's got to be running routes. That would be a tell that doesn't work. But you just can't ask that a play is dead or alive based on him being able to win in a blocking assignment.
And one of the difficult things, too, is he struggled against press coverage is one of the things coming out, and he primarily works out of the slot. And again, if you're running a three-wide receiver set and your outside guys are Terry and Noah Brown, who's your slot guy? Deebo. And Debo's worked a lot in the slot in training camp, so he's going to have to supplant some ways there, whether it's Deebo goes outside and he works in the slot. There's definitely some interference where early on in the year, he's probably going to work as that fourth receiver. But if he's kind of rotating, depending upon what they're trying to do with that third receiver with Noah Brown, I think there's absolutely a way that he could be very, very impactful right away. And just some ways that you can move guys around the football field. And I think having him and Deebo in the offense together allows them to be really, really unique in the way that they can run stuff.
He's Toby Altizer in for Danny Ruye. You're listening to Grant and Danny. Grant Paulson with you on the Fan. By the way, there was a no-hit bid into the ninth inning that Juan Soto just broke up with one out. In the ninth frame, Gavin Williams was working on a no-no for the Cleveland Guardians at Citi Field, and Juan Soto was able to get on base with the bat.
What happened?
Soto broke it up. I wasn't
just a
watching.
Single up the middle or something?
It looks like just a base knock.
Doggone it.
So no-hitter. But we were trolling Clary. I guess it hit the top of the fence, so he got a good... Looks like dead center field, maybe. Soto's standing at home plate admiring it. But I was trolling Clary a little bit because Ryan hates when there's a no-hit bid and people acknowledge it. But as someone who doesn't believe in that and jinxes, it's very important to just let everyone know at all times there's a no-hitter going on. So we don't have to worry about it anymore.
Well,
no-hitter.
Thankfully, it was a home run, by the way. Thankfully, no one's come out at me because I mentioned it in the last update. So... if you want to, it's my fault.
It's definitely not.
It's also my fault because actually right before Juan Soto got that hit, I actually looked at our guy Ben and was like, oh yeah, no, I know. There's no hitter going on. And I said it and he got a hit.
Immediately. So, I said you tune into this Mets game. That's
the
all I said to
him. The stance of the Grant and Danny radio program is that it's Gavin Williams' fault because he threw the pitch. None of us had anything to do with it. You can't affect a no hitter when you're not in the ballpark and when you have nothing to do with the game. Juan Soto good at baseball, Gavin Williams, career game, left one hanging, and Juan Soto hit it over the fence. So none of us will need to apologize from the Grant and Danny radio program. We give the Guardians and Gavin Williams nothing. But yeah, one hit now and one run for the Mets, so the no-no is no more. And we'll spin you around the NFL next. Double Play and Beltway Blitz coming your way on Grant and Danny on the Fan.
He's been very impressive. He's a coach's kid, been around the game his entire life. And if you tell him how to do it one time, he usually nails it. And then if he makes a mistake, he'll come back and get it corrected. But super, super talented, very fast. I've been really impressed. I don't think I could see some of those things at Virginia Tech, watching the film and getting him here in person and watching him run around and watching the coachability and the route tree that he can run. It's been really impressive.
Offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury on rookie receiver Jalen Lane. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. However you're finding us today, thank you for doing so. You can watch us on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube stream. You can listen over the air all over the DMV on our flagship, The Fan 106.7, of course, FM. And then wherever you are, take us with you. You can pause, rewind the show, do whatever you got to do, run into the grocery store and jump back in the car and hit play again on the Odyssey app, which is a very easy way to take us with you on the go. We've been talking about two offensive players that could help this team that are in their first year in Jalen Lane and Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt. If you extrapolate out the discussion, though, to the rest of the field, I mean, the rookie that's actually going to be the biggest impact player, I would think, this year is Trey Amos at corner. Because we're talking about, you know, turning it sideways, cocking our heads a little bit, squinting our eyes. And if this happens and that happens, then Merritt gets carries. Or, you know, if Terry doesn't come back,
yes,
and Noah Brown's not 100% and then Debo's in motion, then maybe Jalen Lane's out wide. Right now, this moment, here's your corner room. Marshawn Lattimore against a wide receiver one. Trey Amos against a wide receiver two outside. And Mikey Sanders still in the nickel, hopefully becoming one of the better interior corners in the league over the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, and according to reports, Mikey didn't have the best day today, but early, the first depth chart came out, and we said that doesn't matter. But regardless, Trey Amos was the number one corner on the outside on that depth chart. So that counts for something. I think they plan on having him outside right away, and he's been really, really impressive in camp. He's been able to stick with all the receivers on this team. Sounds like he had a good day today. We'll talk to John Kime in a little bit about that. But, yeah, I mean, he's going to be a big part of what this defense is able to do this year. On top of what Lattimore can do, if you can have those two guys play on the outside, I thought Mikey was good last year on the outside, but I think he has the potential to be really, really good on the inside. And so if you have the ability now to have two legit outside corners and kick him back inside, suddenly you have a pretty good-looking secondary, at least with your three corners.
They drafted him to be an exceptional nickel corner. He proved to be very capable and, I would say, legit good outside.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, there's more value maybe in some places in the league right now, some teams, some destinations, as a boundary corner than an interior nickel guy. But so many teams are in what we call 11 personnel, spreading you out three, four receivers, that anymore, the base defense involves three corners. So, you know, maybe 20 years ago, if you told me someone's a nickel corner, that would be viewed almost like a third cornerback or something like that. That's just not how it works anymore. He is as much a starter as a Lattimore,
correct,
or an Amos, and it's quite literally a skill set thing. And we've had guys, I think Fred Smoot has said this on our show, but I know other former corners have, that will tell you that the hardest position to play is the nickel because you don't have the ability to use the sideline as your friend. You are quite literally in the middle of the field. You're defending the entire route tree. If you're out on the boundary, you know, you might be able to kind of flip your hips and not have to worry as much about anything other than go ball or corner out toward the sideline. You'd give them something underneath on a quick out or something. You got to play with some inside leverage because you don't want to give that stuff up. In the middle of the field, I mean, they are running everything is at their disposal.
Yeah, and two, with the nickel corners, it used to be, oh, okay, so they're going to cover the slot receiver, and the slot receiver was generally the true third guy. That's not necessarily the case anymore.
True. Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah, people move people all around. Justin Jefferson's going to be in the slot.
Well, Puka Nacua lives there. You know, and he's going to go for 1,500 yards. It might be we were talking about this yesterday. We were playing Terry Orr going through, mm-hmm, wide receivers, and we're like, all right, this guy's a slot, but It's like, yeah, he's a slot, but he might also be the fourth best receiver in the league.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, you look just around. I mean, even the team you're going to face twice this year, CeeDee Lamb, can play outside, can play inside. He's going to be all over the field. So, you know, having a guy like Sanders still that can cover the inside and play well in there. Also, by the way, when you have a guy like Sanders still in there, that's someone that's physical against the run game. You can use him as a little bit of a chess piece, as a potential blitzer as well. I think having that added to the defense is going to be nice. And, oh, by the way, the guy that's right behind him for that sort of position is Noah Igbinoghene, and I thought he's been a standout in camp so far as well. So even if it's something where he struggles a little bit, maybe they have to rotate him still at outside corner, I think that the corner position has been the standout of camp, and having at least 3 to 4 guys that you can trust, whether it's inside or outside, is a nice commodity to have.
All right, I'm going to try. I just came up with this on the fly here, okay? I'm going to try a new segment.
Okay.
If it doesn't go well, we'll never do it again. If I brought it up with Danny, he would just shoot it down and probably not do it. But I think you'll play nicer.
Do you want me to do that since it's Danny?
I'm you could. Yeah, you're Danny. Pretending to be Danny today, so you could absolutely just say, I'm not willing to do this.
Okay.
So I want to play a little retweet or quote tweet, okay?
Okay.
So here's my idea. I'm going to give you some takes going through some NFL teams and divisions. And if you agree with me, you just retweet it. You don't need to add any editorializing.
Got it.
But if you don't agree with it necessarily, go ahead and throw out a quote tweet.
I like this.
And make the change.
Yes.
Okay.
I like this.
So we'll go to the AFC East here, spinning you around the NFL on Grant and Danny. Toby Altizer are in alongside today. There is no team in the AFC East that can really push the Buffalo Bills. They will run away with this division and hide. I don't know that they go 13-4 like they did last year. I think they probably win 12 games, could even be 11 games. But I think they win this division by multiple games when it's all said and done.
Retweet.
No need to editorialize.
Yeah, nothing to add there.
All right, here's my second take on the AFC East. Non-Hard Knocks division, but relevant to the Commanders on the practice field today. The New England Patriots, who were 4-13 last year, will be one of the better stories in the AFC this football season. I think Drake May is really, really good, and with better talent around him, will make a gigantic year two leap. I loved what they did defensively. They added starters Milton Williams from the Eagles, Robert Spillane from the Raiders, Harold Landry, pass rusher, Titans, Carlton Davis, $20 million a year, corner from the Lions. On offense, you mentioned they brought in Stephon Diggs and Mac Hollins. They also brought in Morgan Moses. They also drafted 2 new starters on the offensive line, including stout left tackle Will Campbell, who protected Jaden Daniels' blind side at LSU as a junior. I think New England is an 8 or 9 win team and will have a huge turnaround this year.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking maybe the defense wouldn't be good enough, but looking at the names on here, they're not bad, so I'll retweet that one.
Okay, very good. Let's move on then. So the AFC East, 2 for 2 with retweets. Let's go to the AFC North. Aaron Rodgers struggles enough that we are having conversations as to whether or not they should be starting Will Howard by the end of the year.
Quote tweet. No, I think Rodgers is going to be fine. I think he's going to give you solid, I would say, middle of the pack type production, which should be enough to get them close to being in the playoffs, potentially even into the playoffs, because that defense should be really, really good again. And I think they're going to try to play Pittsburgh Steelers football and hand the ball off to Caleb Johnson, Jaylen Warren, those guys a lot. And so Rodgers is going to have to make, you know, 10, 15 throws a game that are going to win the thing for him, but he's not going to have to throw the ball 30 and 40 times like he used to. I think they're going to try to get back to the old Steelers ground and pound and defense, and I think because of that, Rodgers isn't going to have so much on his shoulders that he's going to struggle enough. He'll go middle of the pack, but I do think that Will Howard is kind of what they're looking at for the future of that team.
You're running out of characters. I hope you paid for a blue check mark on your quote.
I did.
Defensive coordinator Al Golden will help the Bengals fix their problems. Their defense will be good enough that they are not only back in the playoffs, but they are playing in an AFC championship game this year.
I'll try to limit my characters on this one. I'll quote tweet this one. Their defense will be good enough for them to get into the playoffs, but their defense isn't going to be that good.
Is it good enough, though, that they could go on a run? Like, their offense, to me, is going to be arguably the best in the NFL. It's going to be top 5. I think if they have the 20th best defense in the league, they could play for a conference championship game. They won their last 5 games last year. Everyone talks about them having one of the worst defenses in the league. They were 5-0 down the stretch when they finally made some winning time plays.
I think it's good enough for them to go on a run because it's similar to Washington's defense last year. Just don't blow the game, please. Just keep us in it, and the quarterback will go win it.
All right. Retweet or quote tweet. AFC West. I believe that we'll have three playoff teams out of the AFC West again. Last year, the Chiefs at 15 wins, the Chargers at 11 wins, the Broncos at 10 wins. I think all three of those teams make the playoffs again this year.
That's a tough one because I think you could see three teams out of the AFC North, but yeah, I'll retweet this one. Yeah,
I just think the Chargers with Jim Harbaugh, really, really good. They're going to be hard to play. They're going to run the football. They've taken a lot off Herbert's plate. I know it didn't look this way in the playoffs, but he was very responsible. I think he only threw three or four picks all of last year. And then, I know this is a little bit of a hot take, I am buying Denver and Bo Nix and Sean Payton. And I think their defense is special. They're going to have one of the best defenses in the sport. They're going to be top 10. I'll bet anything on that. I think they're probably going to be top 5. So then you add in Nix and Payton and a couple of the weapons they've got now, being able to run the ball better. Why wouldn't, if all three of those teams are healthy, why couldn't all three of those teams go 10-plus wins again?
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at the two divisions I mentioned, AFC North, I have more questions about the Pittsburgh Steelers than I do about the Denver Broncos. Obviously, the Browns aren't making it. I don't think the Raiders will make it in those divisions. So then it comes down to the Ravens and Bengals could still make it, and then three teams out of the AFC West make it, and then you just get your team out of the AFC South and AFC East. I don't think that's far-fetched.
No, I agree. New England would be the team out of the East that could be frisky. Maybe a Colts team out of the South, or Jacksonville, I guess, possibly, although they were 4-13 last year. But let's end our retweet, quote tweet, AFC version in the South right now with this. Team to watch in the AFC and a coach that has a legitimate chance at coach of the year, Liam Cohen in Jacksonville. He gets Trevor Lawrence right, and the 4-13 Jags double their win total this year.
Yeah, retweet.
You're in on Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily think they're going to make the playoffs, but...
here's another one. Daniel Jones ends up starting 13 or more games for the Colts this season.
No, that's not going to happen.
You think it's a lot of Anthony Richardson?
I think it's still going to be a decent bit of Anthony Richardson. I think
from the beginning or because Jones gets benched? Anthony Richardson stinks.
He stinks, but... Daniel Jones isn't giving you anything either.
Right, but Daniel Jones might be able to run their offense better than a guy who can't.
I don't think he starts 13 games, but it's probably closer to half and half.
But so then what's that breakdown? Like, does Richardson get... I know he's starting their preseason opener this weekend.
Yeah, I don't know. It might be Daniel Jones because of the fact that Richardson has had the stuff in the offseason, and it's kind of... he might be a slow starter in training camp here with some of the time missed, even though he's starting that first preseason game. But I can't think that Daniel Jones is going to be so good that he keeps the job all year.
So basically, your point, and I think I would actually retweet this from you, is their quarterback situation is to the extent that whoever starts can't finish.
Like, correct.
Someone's getting benched, and the other guy's going to play a bunch.
Correct.
I think that's probably true. Maybe you give Richardson two or three or four games or something. Let me look at their schedule. A lot of times, that's how you make the decision is, do you have a... you know, if you have a really tough early schedule... you almost throw one guy to the wolves, and the guy that you prefer to start more games comes in after
that.
Not
a bad schedule to start.
Dolphins week one, then the Broncos, Titans, so you could win two of those games. Then you've got the Rams, then you've got the Raiders. Three winnable games out of their first five. Cardinals. Yeah, I mean, it's they actually don't have a bad schedule in general here.
No.
But whoever starts should be able to at least get them two or three wins in their first five games. All right, there you go. Retweet or quote tweet. Should we toss that one out or we feel all right about it?
I think Danny would hate that one, but yes. I kind of like it.
It has to do with like technology, and it's not just named like agree or disagree.
Yeah.
So he would not probably love it that much.
No, we'll have to come up with another way to phrase it for Danny, but I do like that segment.
I think he would be okay with like cosign or make a secondary point.
Sure.
Like he would want me to very clearly describe the actual segment.
Or we could maybe come up with some Star Wars reference or something there of that nature. We had to figure out what worked with that. But
that would be Chewbacca or Han Solo. We should name it that.
Yeah, something like that.
The double play is next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. We got the Blitz in about 20 minutes. Grant and Danny, without Danny today on the Fan. busy summer Wednesday on Grant and Danny. Commanders training in Foxborough with the Patriots. 2 days from right now, the Washington outfit kicks off its preseason. Looking forward to seeing what the Commanders can do against the Patriots under the lights. Who looks good and who doesn't on Friday evening. Plus, the Nats are in action, trying to right themselves this evening. They've lost 6 in a row, 4 straight on a homestand now that has been just a complete disaster. Cade Cavalli makes his first big league start in 3 years tonight, finally back after a litany of injuries. We'll take you up to pregame at 6:15. But right now it is time for our double play. Driven by your local Washington area Honda dealers, now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Visit your local Washington area Honda dealer today. Toby, sometimes you see that these crashes happen and there's something in the truck that makes it kind of entertaining.
Yeah.
That's spilled all over the road. I don't think I've ever seen a picture quite this good. A tractor trailer crash in Pennsylvania. So first of all, hope the driver and everybody's okay. Shut down I-83 completely in both directions. Why? Because crews, and there were several of them, had to clean up over 1,000 pounds of frozen hot dogs that had been strewn across a several-lane highway. You think about, like, the car in front of you that has a trash bag burst open and the mess that that makes and just the sheer destruction on the couple-lane road for, you know, the next couple of hours as people are, like, dodging things. 1,000 pounds of hot dogs, man. It's just boxes and boxes and packages of frozen hot dogs. But it got me to thinking, like, what would be something that if it spilled, you would have to hold yourself back from if you were, like, the first car there parked going, I'll go scoop one of these up. Like, hot dogs are not going to move the needle for me. I mean, they're fun, they're delicious, whatever. You could go get them at the grocery store. Is there anything that if it's strewn across the highway and it's just there and you know it's still good, and you could just throw a couple in the trunk and nobody will really care probably, where you might get out of the car and go, I'm going to go scoop this.
Does it have to be food related?
Doesn't have to be.
If golf balls were everywhere, they're so expensive, I would go get golf balls.
Ooh, that's a good one, actually. Because do you use, like, what are they, Pro V1s or something?
I do not use Pro V1s because I'm not good enough and they cost way too much.
Now, when you say they cost too much, do you buy them in a sleeve of 3 or do you buy them by the dozen?
Generally by a dozen. How much do you think Pro V1s cost?
So, I don't know anything about golf.
A dozen Pro V1s, how much do you think they cost?
I know enough about golf, I guess, to know that people like Pro V1 golf balls. That's the extent of my knowledge. I'll say, because you're saying they're super expensive, I'll say they cost $55.
Did you look this up?
I didn't. I have no idea.
Okay, Pro V1s from Dick's right now, $55.
No way. Okay. Hey, look, Price is Right this thing. Where's Drew Carey?
All right, well, actually, then, it's $54.99, so you went 1 cent over.
Damn, I lose. That's a great answer, though, actually, because it's something that you would use that's expensive,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, very expensive.
What is something that would motivate me? Here's one that would be good. Like bags of chicken wings. Now,
well, I was thinking otherwise. If we're going food item, beef jerky.
Ooh, that's good too, because you don't really have to worry. Like, it's packaged well. It's not dirty. Like, I'm thinking like frozen chicken wings that are in boxes. I could just scoop one up. Here's a real fat guy one for you, okay? What about like a box of frozen McDonald's patties or something like that? Like a McDonald's truck. God willing, everybody's okay, but it gets overturned right in front of my car. And that, like a gold at the end of a leprechaun's rainbow, there's just a box of like nuggets and patties chilling right there.
Yeah.
18 pounds of frozen McDonald's food. That's getting in my trunk.
What would you do if you're on the road behind this truck and it turns over and there's just a 12-pack of hot dogs sitting in front of you, and you just happen to have your tailgate grill in the back, and you're stuck here anyways. You pulling out your grill?
That's actually a good bit. I mean, they close the road in both directions.
I can't go anywhere. Might as well have a nice little tailgate session here.
It's the Beltway, and I'm on my way to Audi Field to see the Washington Spirit. I've got the Weber in the back. Might as well just throw it on the side of the road, and let's cook up a couple of dogs right here and right now. Brandon's in Silver Spring wants to hop in. What's up, Brandon?
Ooh, fun topic, boys. Good distraction from baseball. I was on...
God knows we need him.
We need it. I think it was like 99 or close to 2000. I was on the Beltway Friday afternoon coming home, right near College Park, Maryland, and maybe around 300 feet in front of me was a Marlboro truck, Marlboro cigarettes.
Of course.
And it just opened up, and cartons went everywhere. And people were pulling over, grabbing them. It was on the news. Just it was awesome.
Jumping out of their car. I mean, again, that's up your alley because you're talking expensive.
Yeah.
Now you're not a smoke. When I think of Toby, I think of smoking, drinking.
All those things, yes.
As many, like, sinly things as you could possibly do. Well, that's more Toki if you spin your hat around.
Sure.
You probably dabble in some of those things and we don't know about. But, yeah, I could see that, like, just people scrambling to pick things up. You would, like, if money... I don't know how this would happen, like a Brinks truck or something. Yeah. But like if there was cash on the road, you don't think people would just be going nuts trying to just scoop up money and throw it in pouches
some
or something?
Some people have said some alcoholic beverages in the chat. Like if a...
Oh, hell yeah.
Some beer truck.
Dude, if a bourbon truck spills and there's just bottles of bourbon rolling toward my car, I'm a good Samaritan. Until that's a nice batch of, Old Forester or something. And whoopsie daisy, my shoe stopped it. Who's looking? Nobody? This is a tough debate for your boy. Anthony and Calvert, how's it going?
Good, guys. So about 3 years ago, I'm heading up a highway in southern Maryland, and I'm at a red light, and I look over to the right, and I see a couple crabs in the middle of the road, on the side of the road, and a busted up bushel basket. I figured somebody just dumped some dead crabs because, you know, they didn't want to take them to the dump. They just threw them on the side of the road. So I go up the road about another mile, take the exit ramp. I curl around on the exit ramp. I see another bushel laying on the side of the road. This one's got a lid on it. Right after that, there's another bushel. This one's flipped over. There's crabs laying in the road. And then right after that is another bushel with no lid on it, crabs laying in the road. As I slow down, I notice the crabs are all alive.
No.
So I jump out, throw the hazards on, jump out. Grab the full bushel with the lid on it, throw it in the back of the truck. Then I grabbed the empty bushel with the spilled bushel, started grabbing as many crabs as I could.
Do you have gloves or are you just getting pinched? You're just risking it all.
Well, you know how to pick them up.
Well, if you're from Calvert County, you know how to pick them up. City Slicker,
there you go.
City Slicker Paulson prefers his crabs steamed when he touches them.
No, man. You just pin them in the back and grab them by the back fin.
I grew up on the river. My dad taught me, but I've lost. This is not like riding a bike. You know what I'm saying? It's not worth it to risk. But I get you. So you're picking them up. You're throwing them in the basket.
Picking them up, put them in the bushel basket. I ended up with 2.5 bushels of live number ones.
No way! Wow. Holy shnikes! And then do you call your buddies and you're like, "You want crabs? I got a couple hundred sitting in the car right now."
Yeah. No, I ended up. I ended up selling some to the guys at work for real cheap, like $50 a bushel instead of like $300 a bushel.
Right, exactly.
And then I brought like 3-4 dozen home, and so everybody was happy.
That's the way to do it.
Some poor bastard got to work, and they're like, "Where are the crabs, Bill?" And he's like, "I swear I put them in here."
That's tough.
I'm just thinking of a bottle of like Pappy Van Winkle, just rolling right, and like. I should probably hand this back to them. That's what I should.
That is the good stuff.
That is the good stuff. But I don't know. Crabs might be really, really high on that list.
That's very high.
Yeah. I have not had one of those experiences. Normally, for me, it's just like trash rolling around.
In this market, the crabs, you know how expensive they are right now? I'd go crazy if I was in Anthony's situation.
It's a couple $100 right there. I mean, easy. Well, I guess it depends. But if you got more than a bushel, yeah, on the wrong day, that's a pretty penny. All right, the Beltway Blitz is next on Grant and Danny. Toby's in today. You're locked into the Fan. We'll take you up to 6:15 in pregame of the Nats and the A's.